evening, everyone, or good morning, or good afternoon, on which side of this? Can you have a side on a rotating globe? I'm not sure that's geometrically possible. But anyway, I'm looking at our rotating globe, and there are people tuning in from all over to the other side of midnight, including that guy over in Outer Mongolia. I got to find out who that guy is, because you're on the other side of midnight, and you know that's the magical time between dusk and dawn, where all the stuff you used to kind of poo-poo during daytime, if somebody dared mention it. This time of night, you know, we used to take this more seriously. Well, now, of course, the subject matter of this show, and it's going to be very wide-ranging tonight, is available almost anywhere at any time from almost anyone, because have you noticed, folks, the world is going crazy. And our job here at the other side of midnight is to kind of navigate you through the crazy. Let me give you a couple of announcements at the top of the show here. We are trying something different. As you know, this show has been under attack. I mean, really serious, vicious attack. And I can hear those skeptics out there saying, what the hell would they want to attack Hoagland's show for? You're not doing anything interesting. Wrong. The way you know that is because more weird things have happened to this show electronically, personnel-wise, financially, in every way possible to get us off the air of any show that I have ever been associated with or ever actually even, participated in, either as a guest or as part of the production team. What we're trying tonight is something different. We now have a second live stream, which is only going to our Club 19.5 members. So you guys, you're the guinea pigs. If the Blog Talk link goes down, if it's attacked as it was last week, I mean, it was so bizarre. I won't even go into the details because you would not believe we spent an hour trying to get us back on the air troubleshooting. But you see, we have no control over Blog Talk, their servers, their streams, their inputs, their outputs, whatever. And when we tried to get help, when we tried to actually connect with live people, we could hear them, but they could not hear us. I mean, it was so bizarre. And then it flipped, you know, they could hear us, but we couldn't hear Someone was having fun and games. Now, you might want to know, and I'm going to take a moment here to describe how this works. You know that there's a new term of Vosh, the deep state, kind of like the catch-all. You know, Trump's driving over the deep state, or the deep state's trying to do this, or the deep state is controlling so-and-so and all that. If that's true, it isn't probably the state, because they're right. Our skeptics are correct. We have not reached the level of criticality where anybody of notice should take interest in getting rid of us in any way, shape, or form. Although, you know, to remind you, they did try to kill me a few years ago, so there is that to consider. But what we have found out in dealing with these people and having certain sources who kind of give us information from time to time is that these NSA types or CIA types or DIA types or whatever alphabet agency we're talking about, including many that we don't know their initials, so we can't give them the appropriate public approbation they deserve, they have personnel sitting at computers in the middle of the night who are bored to tears. Oh, are they so damn bored? So what they do, and we've seen this in various quarters recently, the whole Snowden thing is an example. Private contractors who are bored sitting there with all these gadgets at their control, and what they do is they fasten on various targets just for the hell of it. They just want to make their lives miserable. I mean, to be serious for a moment, Robin and I over the years have contacted several people or had people actually contact us who are being harassed electronically. And their friends and their family don't believe it, but we've seen the evidence and we know it is true. Now, again, is this an official sanctioned, crusade? No. These are freelancers sitting there being very fatly paid by the U.S. taxpayer who basically have nothing better to do than to try to attack programs like this program. And they do it just to get their jollies. They just do it so they can sit there and giggle and laugh and, you know, shout at the screen and jump up and down and, well, whatever gets them, you know, through the night. So what we have done now is, courtesy of Chris Spell, we have set up a second server, which everyone who's a member of Club 19.5, all you have to do is go to your membership page, log in, and when you go to the show page, it will show you the player. Click on play and enjoy the show. Now, at the moment, we're reserving this only for the membership, and we're going to see how this works. If you want to hear us, obviously, you would have to join Club 19.5. This has several advantages because as we go through this process, depending upon the level of attack, depending upon whether this is official or it's just freelancers having nothing better to do in the middle of the other side of midnight, we will have that server so armored, so protected, and if anybody tries to hack, we'll be able to follow the breadcrumbs back to their roost, and we will know who you are, and we will know what you did, and we will come and find you with the law. With, I believe doing this is legal at the level of the FBI, so that's what we'll do. We will get the FBI to go and knock on your door, and they will tell you in very nice terms, you're coming with us because you just did something very illegal. Now, if it's not just random weirdnesses out there, if it's really an organizational effort, but it's still kind of like a freelancing because these guys are bored to tears, then they will not want anybody showing up official asking, why were you doing that? In other words, their superiors would not probably be happy to be brought into this loop, and they would come down on them like a ton of bricks because what they're doing by this finagling is they're revealing the depth and breadth and scope and reach of the deep state. So there are many reasons for keeping this quiet. And so by having a server, which is independent now, courtesy of Chris, and we're kind of testing it with the membership, we'll find out the level and the lengths to which they will go to keep the discussion that we're going to have tonight off the air. And tomorrow night's going to be even weirder. Tomorrow night, we're going to be talking about real anti-gravity funded by a major player in the aerospace community, the Boeing Aircraft Company, or the Boeing Company, as they now call themselves. And we happen to have the head of the, well, I should say technically the former head of the Boeing lab on this program tomorrow night, same time, same bat channel, to talk about how rockets are obsolete, and Boeing and McDonnell Douglas and Northrop Grumman and all those guys have known this for decades. And they've been playing a charade because there's alternative ways to get around the universe. And they're now part of our technology, the white technology. So without further ado, let me bring on my guest of the morning. You know him very well. He's been on the show countless times. He appears on Robin's show countless times. She, of course, borrowed him from me. His name is Robert Morningstar. And if you have forgotten Robert's background, let me give you a kind of a thumbnail sketch. Robert is a civilian intelligence analyst, an investigative journalist, and a psychotherapist, currently living in a place where you need to be a psychotherapist, New York City. He's also a specialist in photo interpretation, geometric analysis, and computer imaging. He's a graduate of the Power Memorial Academy and was a New York State Regents Scholar at Fordham University, where he received a degree in psychology. And while at Fordham in 1969, he participated as a research fellow in a very interesting U.S. Navy-sponsored program to develop artificial intelligence. We're going to have another Navy guy on later in the morning, John Francis, to kind of bring us up to date on what's been going on in the Pacific, including these bizarre, you know, fake missile alerts. What's going on with that? So tonight, we're going to range the field. We're going to start at the South Pole of the planet, and we're going to talk about ancient civilizations on Earth, or maybe ETs, although I'm betting on it's us, it's our guys, our great-great-great-great-grandmothers. And without further ado, Robert Morningstar, you are on the air.
Thank you, Richard. It's a pleasure to be on, for real. We were on for real last week for about 10 minutes before Blog Talk bogged out.
Well, this time I think we've got a backup. Remember NASA's mantra, no single point failure?
Right. No, well, congratulations. It's a wonderful and creative solution.
So, well, the neat part about this is that we will have fingerprints. If anybody tries to muddle in this pond now, we will know who they are, where they are. And as I said, we will call our friends at the FBI, and they will get a personal visit.
Yeah, and that's absolutely true. You know, I use McAfee, and McAfee a few years ago saved me from a blitz. I was working on some real technical thing, and all of a sudden, every intelligence agency in the United States and China, Canada, England started to scour my computer, but McAfee kept them away. And through a program called Tracer, it could trace the ping across the world because they don't send it from their link directly.
Oh, no, of course not.
Right, right. So we know this. There's this link or chain of relay stations, and it was able to get them all back. And a majority of them were from Red China at the
time. How interesting.
Yeah.
And it given that we're going to be talking about the Far East later in the show, I imagine that China might be interested in that part of the conversation, if not this part. So since we only have, you know, limited time, why don't we jump in and talk about what it is that brought us all together? Because I've had some very interesting reaction from experts who should know better. Mm-hmm. One who shall be nameless looked at the images of this remarkable pyramid at the Antarctic and said, oh, that's not a pyramid, that's just a mountain. And I said, but do you understand what happens in 30 or 50,000 years to a perfect geometric pyramid on this planet? And there was a pause, and they said, it's just a mountain. Robert, why isn't it just a mountain?
Well, because the architecture of this structure cannot be attributed to nature. Plus, the photographs that we have on the page today under Robert's items, I'm thrilled with them. I think that we've discovered several things, that there's been a partial collapse on one side of the apex of the pyramid, that this partial collapse has revealed an internal structure and a geometry, which is clearly recognizable. And I've done some close-ups of it that show the architecture. I cannot call it anything but architecture because.
Okay, so for people that just kind of are tuning in late, let's start at the beginning of the story. Yeah. What are we looking at? How did you find it? Where is it? What forensics did you do? And what is your conclusion?
My conclusion, well, I found the photograph from scouring Google ever since the discovery was made a couple of years ago. Actually, you know, this discovery was revealed to us, as is often done, in a science fiction movie. And that movie is called Alien versus Predator, which came out around 2004 and takes place in Antarctica. An American satellite picks up an anomaly in Antarctica. When it goes to subsurface radar, it shows a pyramid. They come in closer and analyze it. They show internal structure, passageways. So they send in a team to explore it, and that's when you find out what it really is. And I don't want to ruin it for everybody, but I'd like to say that I came to the film about halfway through. I didn't go to the theater, but my friends told me about it. So I come upon the film about halfway through, and I'm watching a fight between Alien versus Predator. And I'm totally into it all of a sudden in like 10 seconds. But you know what really fascinated me? They're both aliens. They're both horrible. But in about 10 to 15 seconds, I was on the side of Predator. Predator was my champion, you know. Why? Why? Because he had two legs, two arms, a head, a torso, looked like a human. And that other thing, the alien is just evil. And maybe that's what Buzz Aldrin was talking about.
So let's not get ahead of the story.
Yeah,
by the way, let me give you a report. This is from Andrew, who's a Club 19.5 member. He says, oh, wow, the sound on the new stream is tremendous. You should mention the audio quality. Oh, my God, it's so much better than Blog Talk. So all you members of Club 19.5, welcome to the future. Sorry, Robert, go ahead.
That's okay. I'm happy to know. I'll put on my most resonant voice. So anyway. I found several photographs, but some of the best, including this one, and I want to tip my hat to my friend Blake Cousins and his brother on Third Phase of the Moon,
Because, oh, I should tell people where to go to see these. Go to theothersideofmidnight.com, click on the banner for Robert tonight, Robert Morningstar. That will take you to the guest page. Scroll down to Robert Morningstar's items, and there's a stunning series of really amazing pyramidal images of this thing sitting there. Where in Antarctica is this, by the way?
Oh, that's fascinating, and I'm glad I prepared for that question because the coordinates are 80 south.
Wait, 39. There's something bumped. We didn't get that.
I said, if I recall correctly, 80 south and 39 point something west. That's remarkable.
What? 39 point something? Twice 19.5 something?
I didn't zero in on that. I zeroed in on the fact that the longitude is one half of the latitude, 80 and 40, basically. That's what I was thinking about. Okay. But you're absolutely right. 19.5 times two.
Yep.
And I mean, the coordinates of these sites are very revealing. And I hope to have another show with you to talk to you about that other subject that starts with an A. Wonderful.
Oh, yes. Well, we'll do it. That needs a whole show. You know,
I understand.
We'll give a little tease tonight for later about our friend T.T. Brown, but that deserves its own 3 hours. So, so this is at 80 south, 39 and change west.
That's what I saw in one of the photographs that gave it. Yes. Oh, listen to this. I think I sent you an article from The Guardian talking about exactly the same thing. And it showed that pin. Now, in Google Earth, when you find something, you can pin it and you can label it. So whoever found this amazing artifact pinned it and labeled it Antarctic Pyramid. But they spelled Antarctic wrong. They forgot the C. So those debunkers at the Guardian, because, you know, England doesn't have a free press. England is very, very heavily censored. They have notices from A to D that each story is classified A to D. And if you get a D notice, it never sees sunlight. So if you get a C notice, it might get sunlight, but it gets derision, ridicule, skepticism. And that's, I think, what happened to this article in The Guardian. Regardless, they try to debunk the picture because the guy who pinned the pyramid spelled Antarctic wrong by leaving out the sea. And they mentioned this ruse. You know, it's just another one of those tricks to
so they basically try to debunk this based on a typo?
On a typo.
Are they that idiotic to think that anybody's going to listen to that?
Sure is, but they are forced by policy to do that. That's what I'm saying. And yet they gave that extensive report and all those photographs all the way down the line. Now, the photographs that you're seeing, which I feel reveal a possible entrance near the apex of this great pyramid of Antarctica.
Okay, so we're going from number one to number two.
Well, let me tell you about number one just in the first place. That photograph came to me by way of Blake Cousins and his show, The Third Phase of the Moon. Now, the unique thing is, you know, I have this technique that I give up a little bit of resolution for illumination. Okay, and by that I mean that, for example, this photograph was in a video. So I froze the frame. I've never seen this photograph before. I've seen it a lot of the other aspects of this area. And so it struck me. So I got my camera and I have a 42-inch monitor. And I've gauged the right place from which to take a good picture. And I shot this picture. Now, as I said, there's a little trade-off because there's pixelation, but it's a very high-definition TV. Give up the little bit of resolution, you get illumination in backlighting a lot of dark areas, and this brought to light a lot of structure, a lot of geometry. Something that looks like a question mark is the most evident, from this angle, is the most self-evident geometry. When we get down into number two, I start to show you, I show you in the inset, a close-up of that, what I consider to be a partial collapse or an opening.
Well, it's very rectilinear.
Oh, absolutely.
Looks like a huge hangar door.
Yes. And any number of descriptions.
By the way, speaking of huge, how big is this thing?
You know, I really don't know how high it is. There's very little information. Several hundred feet high is because you can see it in the satellite photo. My estimate, if I were just to make a guess, at least 500 feet high.
Okay,
that's my estimate. Now we get into the third picture, apex of the Antarctic pyramid. Right. And you can see there, in that gray triangle, you know, there's another thing I do in my technique to bring out detail. And one of them is to take a photograph and swap red for blue. All right, there's a lot of blue, even in a black and white photograph, full color photograph, there's blue and red. And there's a technique for swapping red and blue, and I use it. And that's why you see this little reddish color on the left side of this pyramid, but it makes a completely gray, black and white side on the right side, right? That triangle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can see there's something there that looks analogous to, I would say, a question mark. Let's just call it that. And the thing about that is that the stones, boulders, blocks, look to me to be all about the same size and all offset about the same distance. And you can follow it down. You see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Then there's a turn 8, 9, 10, 11 blocks. Right? That's the most salient geometry, except for the thing it's resting on. So if we go down to the next photograph.
Number four,
where I have, I've labeled it UVWXYZ, because this is going to make it a lot easier for us to study. All right, we were just up there in X, right?
Yep, that's up the rectilinear entrance or hangar door or whatever.
The question mark. I think that this thing is symmetrical, and I have another photograph that I found this week which shows it in bright sunshine from the other side, right?
So
if this were the southwest side, we can't tell exactly. I don't know the time of day. If I knew the time of day, I might be able to tell you which side we're looking at. But let's just say that this side here is the southwest side. I found the photograph showing the southeast edge looking into that cavity. And you can still see this geometry, and you can see other stones that you can't see in this one. So I'm going to prepare that, and later on I'll send it to add it to this collection. But let's just look at X for a moment. All right, we counted out.
This is on number four in Robert's items on the other side of midnight on the guest page for tonight.
Okay, now let's look at XY. Right? You have an enclosure there. It's a rectangle.
Mm.
Partially formed by the question mark. You see where the question mark bends, comes to the left, and then makes a right angle down.
The question mark
actually continues down and makes an enclosure with a partial opening, which is the partial opening would be exactly where Y is.
I see that.
Now, as I started, continued to study this, strangely enough, this will be mind-boggling. I find bilateral symmetry. When I look at the two pictures, I find bilateral symmetry in these two pictures. And point U and point Z are related. It seems to me that at point U, we're looking into an aperture of some sort. You see where the U is? It's very black, very dark.
Another entrance
or an inlet for air. Did you ever consider the idea that if you allow air into a structure like this, the air pressure itself would tend to support the structure? So if you inflated it, basically imagine building a stone pyramid that could be partially inflated by the coldest air on the planet and winds that would inflate it. And so the stones would tend to be slightly uplifted and supported by air pressure. That's just a wild guess, okay? That's the way my mind thinks. What would this?
I don't think that would work without energy being expended, like some kind of turbine or compressor.
Oh, well, the winds down there blow pretty hard, you know, and we don't know what else is on the other side. Anyway, so I find bilateral symmetry there. Then the enclosure is remarkable. Now look at this semicircular opening where I have Y and W.
Mm.
You have a semicircular formation with a dot, which would be almost like a concentric circle. Then you have something that looks like a V shape with a long stem. The remarkable thing is in the other photograph, I can discern one of these figures, this type of geometry, on the other side. So I think that we are on the verge of discovering a possible entrance into this thing, which will prove that it's not a natural formation. What they would have us believe is that this is a mountain of coal that has been carved by the winds at perfectly right angles.
Wait. Errol Torin, when he and I were looking at Cydonia, when Errol, who was member of geomorphologist with the Defense Mapping Agency, you can't get more upper military in terms of reconnaissance than the defense mapping. They actually changed their name. I don't know what it is now. Mm-hmm. But one of his arguments for the reality of the structures at Cydonia was because if the wind carves a pyramidal side, like a triangular face, mm-hmm. when the wind changes, it's going to erase that side and make another side. So you can never have natural symmetry by means right. of wind, because it's always going to erase one of the sides it's not blowing. You know?
Exactly. And no matter how long it blows down in Antarctica, I don't care. Those are lame brain explanations, you know.
Again, well, they're desperate explanations. It's like
yes,
the so-called skeptics are looking for anything not to confront the obvious, which is, oh my God, this was built by somebody.
Yes. By the way, this pyramid is situated somewhere near the Shackleton Mountains. I think the area is called Redding Mountains, but it's that area. Where Shackleton bought the farm, bought the ice farm. Terrible story.
Do you happen to have in your copious background there, graphs, maps, whatever, the route of Bird's first air flight and then back
well,
to
McMurdo? Well, basically, yes, from McMurdo, draw a straight line more or less from McMurdo over to the South Pole and then make a U-turn and come on back.
Okay.
Which brings us to that story about the legend of finding an entrance into the inner earth, and the legend that goes back to Nazi Germany. The interesting thing is, you know, that the Germans were down there really early on and were really loaded up with scientists and scientific equipment, and a map has emerged of Antarctica in the Neuschwabenland area that shows entrances and a vast cavern system that the Germans apparently discovered.
Is this a German map?
I am talking about a German map, yes. That,
oh, my God.
Documentary. It came out about 2 years ago. I don't know why, but a lot of Americans will look at a German map and then just flip it off because they can't read the writing. And fortunately, I've studied German long enough that even if I don't understand a word, I can find out what it means. And it's, that's why I find out these things. Because I'm persistent, you know. I even studied Egyptian hieroglyphics many, many years ago.
Every good civilian intelligence analyst should be. Hold it there. We're at the bottom of the hour. My guest this morning is Robert Morningstar. I should say my first guest, because we're going to have a lot of people showing up with very interesting things that are all going to kind of connect the dots together by the time we reach the end of the show. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return. Let me talk to you guys kind of one-on-one for a moment here. There's been a lot of discussion about, you know, why people should join Club 19.5. And one of the main reasons we're showing you tonight, if you're a member of the club and you're tuned in, and we've got lots of people now, membership, tuned into the stream, they're saying, oh, my God, Chris, your new streaming audio is so much cleaner. I like it. Thank you. And let's see. Andrew says, yes, it's huge. This is a very huge selling point. Perfect, Richard. Well, you'll have more of this. And, of course, if this works the way we're going to try to make it work, if they try to knock us off Blog Talk ever again, this will be the backup. If you're a member of Club 19.5, the show, minus the fireworks, will go on. If you're not, you'll be kind of left in the dark and you won't know what's happening, and you'll go to Facebook and continue to post a notice and say things like, well, it's happened again and all that. I have a feeling that having this insurance policy, having this electronic insurance policy, courtesy again of Chris Bell, is going to basically make this show almost bulletproof in terms of the technical nonsense. But there are other reasons you should join. Besides, it's a very, very, very good audio because he's enhancing me, he's enhancing the guests, he's enhancing music. Well, actually, music will come by maybe tomorrow, but probably by next weekend. We're kind of feeling our way because we have to set up our own network. It's obvious now we can't depend on any of the normal outlets for this kind of information. I mean, pyramids, man-made pyramids at the South Pole. And in the next segment, we're going to talk with Robert about all the VIPs up to and including the Secretary of State of the United States that suddenly found it critical in their schedule to make a slight detour and go 12,000 miles from the Northern Hemisphere to the Southern and wind up at the South Pole, including the second guy to walk on the moon. What in the world is going on with that? Well, we'll get to that in a minute. But if we're touching on these subjects that are trying to rip the scab off the deep, 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 deep state and what they've really been up to and all the chicanery and all the exciting, extraordinary, revolutionary science and technologies that are about to come falling and spilling out of Fibber McGee's closet, the best way you can be front row and center for this is to join Club 19.5. And it's so simple. It's not even 10 bucks a month. And this will now give you guaranteed access to a very high-quality archive, commercial-free. It'll give you access to papers and studies and some presentations that we're planning. I mean, in a week after this weekend, we're doing a two-night show, both Saturday night and Sunday night, on what the hell is really on the moon. And they're going to really probably try to screw with that one. Well, it won't work. Because now we have backups. Now we have no single point failure. Now, if you're a member of the club, you get a chance to see and hear first what it is that they, ubiquitous they, do not want you to see. And I think that's worth a little money because in these days, information is power. That's why Jones calls his thing InfoWars. We're at war, folks. The only question is, who are we at war with? And the bad side of that is it's looking more and more like we're at war with some part of ourselves. Oh. That in the last few moments of the waning of the cover-up and the beginning of the disclosure era, they're trying their level best to keep us under wraps. We shall return. And we are back with Robert Morningstar on this January 27th, Saturday night. Robert, pick up, please.
Yeah. So the pyramid, definitely not a natural structure. A natural structure would not have this geometry and boulders or blocks of equal size, nor the bilateral symmetry. I mentioned briefly earlier, I mentioned Buzz Aldrin, and this is something that lit up the whole research community when he tweeted last year he was taken to Antarctica to be shown something. Now, why would you take an astronaut to Antarctica to show him something if it didn't have something?
Maybe it was something. Right? I was going to say maybe it was something that was like something he saw.
Maybe it might spark his memory. Or yeah. So the guy goes down there. I'm sorry, I'm very familiar with Buzz, so I call him the guy. So the guy goes down there. Poor old geezer. They drag him out of his comfortable life, throw him in Antarctica. And what does he do? He tweets something. And the tweet says, "We are all in danger. It is pure evil." And it shows the best picture up to that time. The picture that Buzz Aldrin sent of this pyramid was the best picture available to that date. After that,
Hang on. Let me make sure I'm clear on this. Buzz Aldrin, second man on the moon, is taken to Antarctica to see something
right.
That in our speculation might look like something he saw on the moon.
Right.
And in the middle of his sojourn, he tweets out, "This is evil," and he attaches a photograph of this pyramid?
Yes, he did.
Oh, my.
That's why I jumped on the case. Honestly, I've been looking at the pyramid here and there, glancing at it and, mystified. But when he wrote that and showed the pyramid, then my mind started to work, and I said, we are all in danger. This is pure evil. Where have I seen this before? Oh, yes. The pyramid in Antarctica in Alien versus Predator. And I've just sent you the link, and I hope that Kinthea will put it up. It's a fun link. It's a 2 minute, 39 second fight between Alien and Predator. And you'll see in about 15 seconds why I said to myself, man, if I was in that room, I know which one I'd help. And it actually
because obviously you're a bipedal chauvinist.
I'm gonna have more in common with the guy with two legs and the dreadlocks of metal than that thing with the spiked tail and the acid saliva and so on.
Well, when they finally decide to meet us, on the front porch. I guess you're not going to like the guys from Alpha Centauri who look like, jellyfish blobs.
Oh, it's the behavior. It doesn't do what the alien does,
By the way, let me give a little on-stream production here. Chris, since you're subbing, Kintia's not with us tonight. Kintia had another engagement, which was really super important, prior commitment and all that. Mm-hmm. So she set up everything, wished us well, and we haven't seen her in hours, but Chris is on duty, so he will take your link in Skype and put it on the other side of midnight under Robert's items, probably at the bottom.
Thank you. I think the audience will have a lot of fun looking at this little snippet. And then maybe you will go and see the movie. It actually is worthwhile. It has a woman hero, as usual. Hollywood doesn't allow men heroes anymore. So it has a woman hero. I have a difficult time saying that. A woman heroine. Anyway. The story is that they go in, and what they find is
I'm going to let that chauvinism pass, but go ahead.
That's okay. It's the age of Trump. I can say anything I want. Anyway, let's go. The point is let's call it the CIA.
You give me an entrance big enough to fly the Enterprise through, and I bite my tongue. Okay.
Let's steer away from it and stick to this. The CIA NSA mission down there screws up everything by going into the pyramid, because when they go in the pyramid, they unseal it. And the purpose.
Wait, are we talking fact or fiction now?
No, the movie, the Alien versus Predator.
Please,
I'm giving you background.
I got lost there. I thought that somebody had secretly visited this pyramid, but you're saying in the film,
and I'm saying, remember, we have that term predictive programming, that they mm-hmm. will massage your subconscious mind with imagery and a storyline that, a few years down the trail, they'll spring the real thing on you, and then your mind won't be shocked or as shocked as it would have been if they had just sprung it. So that's what I think is happening. They told us about something very dangerous in Antarctica. It was in a pyramid, pyramids associated with it. And what it turns out to be is that there's one group of aliens in the pyramid that are keeping the other aliens locked up in the pyramid. It's basically a prison. And when the NSA team goes in there, they spring the cage, the aliens all start creeping out, and then the predators have to clean up the whole scene. It's a very good movie. It also depicts in the beginning something akin to the Anunnaki coming to Earth and, enslaving mankind and all of these other things.
I think this is a part of the show where we should make a point, which is your position and mine and Chris Knowles and a lot of other people that we've had on the show is that Hollywood is kind of like a front for reality. Everything extraordinary, bizarre, exotic, amazing, like, oh, you can't believe that you see in a Hollywood blockbuster. It's actually real, folks. It's not made up. It's not fiction. It's been fictionalized. Mm-hmm. So psychologically, this goes back to your psychology degree, we are getting the water's being turned up on the frog. We don't really notice because it's all entertainment, mm-hmm. but they're getting us ready a la Brookings for reality when someone crosses the line and said, all that stuff you thought was just made up, that's the real stuff. The life you're living is what's just kind of made up.
Yes, I agree, Richard. That's exactly how I feel about the liaison between CIA and Hollywood. When you go back when you go back in time and look at the pictures of the 1980s made by Harrison Ford, all those Cold War movies, they really were telling the story of what's really going on. The James Bond series, you have everything from the high technology that was to come to the pipeline. You know, in the early 2000s, the James Bond movie repeatedly goes to Central Asia, repeatedly deals with the pipeline through Afghanistan. And so the geopolitical setup, the geopolitical equation is being presented to the American, the British public, period, was being presented regularly by the James Bond movies. One that really stands out is that one, I guess it's Octopussy, about the intention of one crazed Soviet general to detonate an American nuclear bomb in a West German city.
I think it was England. No, it was England, and it was under the guise of a circus performance.
Yeah, but it wasn't England. It was Germany, where that thing was happening, and they bust in. It's a typical German circus that they did. Regardless, in that movie, they had an amazing display where the Russian general is describing the geopolitics. They show a huge map of Soviet Union, Central Europe, and Western Europe, and all the forces. And they depict them in computer graphics of that time to show you precisely where all our forces were in West Germany and the famous pass through which they knew that any attack from the east, because of the mountainous terrain in Germany, there's only one pass through which they could possibly come with their tanks. And so everything was concentrated around that pass. And he was discussing this. General explains why, you know, they're never going to succeed that way and they shouldn't back down. And what they have to do is turn the tables by turning the whole world against the United States for accidentally or intentionally detonating that atom bomb that was on the train. Yes. So,
okay. Two items.
Programming is a reality.
Two items. Chris has done yeoman service. Your link is up with Alien versus Predator. It is link number 11 on the page on under your items. And the other thing is time is fugiting. It's almost quarter of the hour.
All right.
And we haven't really gotten into the really good stuff here. So let's move along.
Okay. So that's the pyramid. We'll leave the pyramid behind for now, and I hope that people will go and study it. Now, the Eye of Ra has always been associated with Egypt. The Eye of Ra represents the eye of the Savior who sacrificed his eye in a battle against evil, the evil gods Seth and Typhon. They had overcome mankind. They were tyrannizing mankind. They were eating mankind. They were cannibals. So Seth is the evil god. And so Horus was raised in secret, and at the age of 18 or 20, he came forth, and he saved the human race. So he's the first Messiah in human history. And so I'm putting there this because it's pertinent to pyramids, Egypt, and what I'm going to show you later. Now, another interesting artifact, a site that has been found, is this thing called Turtle Cave. It's a popular name recently given. Again, one of these names that somebody tagged it on. It makes it kind of funny, but it's appropriate. It does look like a turtle shell.
Okay, hang on. This is another Google Earth close-up of something in the Antarctic.
Yes, and it's on a place that I have named it Mount Ra Bird, as in Admiral Byrd and Robert. Robert, okay? You know, hey, folks, isn't that egotism to name something after yourself? I'm not being so blatant, but who named Pike's Peak? Mr. Pike went up there and he said, took a leak. He got Pike's Peak. And he said, I'm going to name this place after myself. So that's what explorers do. So anyway, this is Mount Robert, and you'll see why I call it that in a couple of frames. So this was discovered several years ago, again, by a Google explorer.
This is number 6 in your items.
Yes, and this is also in a very—
Oh, my God, look at that. Look at those dimples.
Look at the metallic structure.
That's a huge— – that's like a movable manhole cover or something.
Yeah, and it is gigantic actually because the—
– Do we know the scale?
It's the scale. The entrance is 90 meters wide and 30 meters high.
Holy cow. Multiply by 3. So that's hundreds of feet.
Yeah, 91827, and then 90 feet high, 270 feet wide. And so I worked on different photos or captured some myself from Google Earth, and I decided to enhance, improve the lighting. And what it really brought was the metallic sheen on this. This was by moving up the mountain. It was not exactly the same aspect, just a little bit off. And so this is what my enhancement, changing gamma, improving sharpness, reducing brightness, believe it or not, brings up these kinds of images. And it is clearly unnatural to me.
No, there's no doubt. That's not natural.
So it's either a canopy over an entrance that was built, or other people thought, well, maybe it's a flying saucer that crashed right into the mountainside. Right? Could be. Or a Nazi helmet. to advertise the entrance. You know, they had a fascination with that curve form. So now we go to I think this is my discovery, right? The pyramid was somebody else's discovery, but this is my discovery. I was watching, again, another one of these YouTube videos that was concentrating on Turtle Cave.
You spend a lot of time watching YouTube, Robert.
Well, it's a wonderful source of information if the people who are making them are reliable people. And also, people around the world are sending in wonderful samples of things they've seen, photos they've taken. So I do, yes. And I try to separate the wheat from the chaff.
Look at that enhancement. You can really see the, you know, ruffles have ridges.
Yeah, we're talking about number seven?
No, number seven. No, we're talking about number seven. Look at the enhancement. You've done a damn good job. There's no way that thing is natural.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
it. It's like a huge lid on a pressure cooker that we would think would kind of raises up like some kind of submarine hatch.
Yeah.
Yes, and it's open, and we're looking. It's partially open, not totally. Yeah. And we're looking.
I have others that I didn't want to overload the page, but I have others looking straight into the entrance. And this thing is
300 feet across.
Yeah.
That's a football field.
Yep.
That's the size of ISIS in orbit. The space station is roughly this size.
Wow, that's good to know. Hey, Richard, do you know how high the space station goes, the top and bottom of its flight plan?
Well, it's roughly circular, 250 miles, 225, something like
that. That's what I guessed, yeah. But I know that they've raised it a couple of times, about 100 miles, and moved it because they thought something was coming down.
Well, No. They just raise it. They move it by a few miles because, you know, a miss is as good as a mile. Fire the thrusters, and they move it slightly, and then the thing passes left, right, top, bottom. But no, it doesn't have the rocketry to move that huge mass. That thing weighs more now than an aircraft carrier.
Wow.
Adding, and it's been building and building, and it's huge, but it's in zero gravity, so you can move it with modest thrusters. And
then they
have to bring up fuel to redo the thrusters. And that, by the way, is going to be part of our discussion tomorrow night.
Do you know what the highest altitude the shuttles ever went? My guess was 350 miles altitude. Do you know?
Off the top of my head, I don't. I think it was somewhere around there.
Yeah, I remember that. So we're in the same ballpark. I was asked those questions. So now let us continue. Where is this little turtle cave? A cute little name. You know, again, slightly dismissive, you know, slightly put off. But I think it fits the bill. So anyway.
Actually, it could be a double or triple meaning, because what do turtles do to preserve their life? They withdraw inside their shell.
That's right. I accept it, and that's why I'm referring it to it by that name. Now, here's the key. I knew about this place years ago. It was discovered years ago, and I've been following it, but I never knew exactly where it was. And so I turned on one of these YouTubes, and the person, this one was, you know, Tyler at Secure Team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's another, it's like third phase of the moon. But Tyler is a very smart young man, and he does good work. So he went into Turtle Cave, but what he did is he came in from orbit spinning around, you know. He spun the globe around really fast and zeroed in on the cave. And I watched it a few times. And as I've said before, I have very fast eyes. And in that spin, while he was going at Turtle Cave, my peripheral vision picked up something. And I said, what is that? Mm. It seemed like a perfect circle. And I backed up and I had to work to stop the frame because it's a very quick transition from orbit right into Turtle Cave. So I froze it and I got the sight. So then I was able to track it down myself. And this is what I discovered. I consider this a meteor impact crater. And look at the perfect circularity.
Okay, we're talking number 8 now, right?
Number 8, close-up of the crater now named Mount Robert. So here, that perfect scallop, look at the top. It is almost a cookie-cutter sharpness to that ice cliff, and that's what it is.
Oh, yeah.
And then look.
So wait. We're looking down from orbit, right? There's yes. Google.
Yes.
Google Maps is, depending upon what the imagery is, because they use all kinds of different imagery. We're looking at something from a couple hundred miles up, probably. And yes. You got snow, and then it comes to an edge, a circular edge, and it falls vertically.
Right.
Do we know how far down that drop is?
Oh, I don't know. I could tell you, and if I had my protractor, but I can tell you this. The diameter of this crater is 1,700 feet.
Oh, my gosh.
This is big. And it is at the top of the mountain where Turtle Cave is, right adjacent. Let's go down to the next picture, and I'll give you an idea. All right, you see the next picture. This is the whole area.
Number nine.
This is the whole area. And I've discovered something really interesting even in just the last day or so in preparing for the show. Now, you see the red line across the top in the middle of the section of the photo?
Mm-hmm.
That's the diameter. And you are looking at a different aspect, a lower a slant view of the crater on Mount Robert.
If this was originally circular or is circular,
yes,
and it looks elliptical, then it means it has to be foreshortened because the camera that took it, the spacecraft that took it, was looking at an angle, maybe 45 degrees.
Yeah, but here it is foreshortened. The other one, I took the spacecraft over it, and I got the shot straight down to show you the circle. Do you see the difference between 8 and 9?
Yes.
In 8, you're looking right into the crater. And in 9, you're higher up, and let's call it farther to the southwest if the top is north. Now
where is your Turtle Cave from here?
Turtle Cave. Now, follow along, folks. Let's put your cursor on the left side, the end point of the red line. Come straight. And then come straight down to that arrow-shaped agglomeration of snow on the side of the mountain.
I see it. Okay. You have to move the cursor slightly to the right.
Yeah.
Down and to the right.
It's good enough to come straight down to the point of that arrow and halfway down. Now go over to the left into that black area. There's a little white dot. That's approximately where Turtle Cave is.
Oh, my God.
In relationship to this land feature. Now, Richard, I said that I discovered something very interesting in recent days, and that is this. Now, I'm looking at the crater, and you see a 1,700-foot diameter, right?
Yep.
But look around, look at the curvature of the scallop, right? That's what I'm calling that sheer ice cliff.
Mm-hmm.
Follow it around to the right. There's a big patch of snow, but then you see another line, and it keeps coming around, comes around the mountains, and that whole mountain area makes a second greater circle, right? As if what is the diameter of the crater, then you could consider it the radius of another circle.
Yeah, I can see that.
Can you see that?
Yeah.
And so we would have a circle that has—
within a circle.
A circle within a circle, basically a Tai Chi sign.
On the apex of this mountain, because you can see the steep cliffs on the wide angle below the ragged dark stuff that marks out the perimeter of the second circle.
Yes.
Falling away.
Yes.
Like glaciers, like, you know.
Right. And now, if I recall correctly, the site of the crater. When I put the cursor right in the center of the crater, it was six. I believe it was 66 and 23. The lat long.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, 60, you can see. No. 69 and 23. 69 and 23. 3 times 23 is 69.
That's very weird.
Wait till we get to the relationship between Atlantis and the Great Pyramid in some show in a couple of weeks, and then we're really going to blow minds. Because I'm really getting into the code, you know. Remember, you know Munch's global grid code much better than I. I've only recently, over the last 2 years, found Munch's video where he explains it in those very rudimentary drawings, but I got the hang of it. It's a very, very interesting system.
For those who aren't following who Carl Munch is, explain in 3 or 4 sentences what he found and why it's so stunningly important now.
Well, Carl Munch studied all the ancient megalithic sites.
And all over the world.
All over the world. And he started to find a relationship in the latitude and longitude of these, and then there was some multiplicative factor that when he multiplied the lat and the long, and this factor would give a number, and then he was able to codify this system, and it's called the global grid and the Munch global grid code. And you could probably elucidate more on that, since you are a longer term professor of these concepts.
Well, back when I published...
There was a multiplication by a radian, right? He multiplied something by a radian. A radian is an angle of 57 degrees.
Well, pi is part of the equation in some places. What he found is that all of these sites, all of these ancients, from Stonehenge to Tikal in Guatemala to, you know, Panther Island off Florida to Bimini, including Giza, all these ancient, incredibly important sacred sites all fall on this same global grid, and they all relate to each other mathematically, and the intrinsic geometry of each site relates to its own location on the grid redundantly, and it appeared to have been set in place by an incredibly advanced ancient civilization that knew the location of features down to inches, and our GPS only works on feet at the moment. That's the best precision, which means that whoever did this had a higher level of technological precision than we have currently attained in the first part of the 21st century.
Not to mention the Perry Reese map.
Yeah, that's another clue.
Yeah.
And when we're about 2 minutes from the top of the hour, we're going to bring Robert Stanley on, because I want to go from the Antarctic to something he has been touting over the last several days. Then we'll go back to the Antarctic, and then we'll go out to the far Pacific. In fact, let me do that now.
Okay.
You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. We are going to be bringing another guest on in a few minutes here. This is really extraordinary, because what we're trying to do is to lay foundation for the idea that, A, we're not the first. You know, humanity in its technological majesty right now is kind of like kids just relearning very important stuff, because someone came before, they left stuff when they came before, and someone now in the deep state, love that term, it's so resonant with metaphor, someone or someone's in the deep state is basically ransacking this stuff and not letting the rest of us know, and that's where we get to Robert Stanley and his story when we return. You were on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall be right back. Thanks for listening to this exciting first hour. Now, the second and third hour of the show is available to Club 19.5 members only. Please support the show by subscribing to Club 19.5 and join our very interesting community. To do that, please visit the website, theothersideofmidnight.com, and click on the Join Club 19.5 link in the left-hand column. As a Club 19.5 member, you'll gain access to the rest of this show and all previous 350-plus shows that we have done. Now, recent Club 19.5 member archive recording have the commercials removed, and the sound quality has been enhanced. You'll also receive a dedicated private podcast feed that contains these enhanced show recordings. And you'll be able to download the MP3 files directly from the archive if you prefer. As a Club 19.5 member, you'll have access to a private chat server that members use to chat about the show during the show, and you will have a direct channel to post a question that will be read on the air to the guest. And you'll have a place to post questions during our open hailing frequencies. We realize that not everyone wants to call in live, and this gives you an easy way to participate in a live show without having to participate. Club 19.5 members can use this private chat to talk about the shows, ask questions, suggest new guests, and I may even pop on from time to time to answer specific questions. Also, the entire Bridge crew is in these participating chat channels, so you can interact with them as well. You'll also be the first to preview our new videos and reports. We'll be adding exclusive new features to Club 19.5 as we go forward, and boy, have we got some amazing things to tell you about in the coming weeks. So please support the show and don't miss all the exciting new things we have planned. I want to thank all our Club 19.5 members because without your guys' support, this show would not be on the air. Please help us continue growing the show by subscribing to Club 19.5 today. And when I say we really need you, we really need you. Over and out.